The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 5. The Thesmophoria, Part 2. A mournful song and the unmistakable scent of winter filled the mist the next morning, when the festival attendants woke up to an eerie landscape. The meadow grasses were covered in a thin dusting of ice, and their dried flower heads, which the freezing rain had pounded relentlessly overnight, were encased in transparent globes of ice, that acted like magnifying glass to enhance every detail of their intricate structures. The most beautiful among them, the latest flowers of the season, had been caught by the sudden freeze while still at the peak of their bloom, and the icy shells displayed their half-opened blossoms like works of art, like summer frozen in time, insulated by a magical crystal ball from the harshness of the dark season. Towards the morning, the cold and the rain gave way to a plushy fog, thick like soup, which caressed the frozen wonderland with ghostly fingers and muffled the sounds. The warmth melted the surfaces of the ice globes, making them glisten in the low light and look polished like mirrors. Nature was so quiet in the fog, a soft, comforting and unnatural silence which reminded Persephone of home. Nobody was supposed to talk the second day, the day of mourning. The only sound which accompanied their reflective stillness was the dirge of the dead, sung by the younger women, whose soft voices had the delicate clarity of glass bells. There was to be no food, no comfort, on the second day, but should one be overcome by weakness, one was allowed a few pomegranate seeds. Persephone watched, as if from very far away, through the veil of the fog, as the women unbraided their hair and allowed it to flow down their shoulders, and covered their faces, while they beat their chests in silence and bowed in prostration until their foreheads touched the dirt. As she sat, motionless, watching the mists sweep quickly past her, images started to emerge from their murky depths, faceless figures wandering aimlessly through the fog, ignoring each other, going around in circles, some looking so far gone, it was clear they weren't aware of their surroundings, some inconsolable in their grief, the ghostly army of the lost. They were the unburied, those who had died alone, whom Charon refused passage because they didn't have coin for him, for the underworld wasn't kinder to the needy any more than the world above, and its denizens, the ultimate enforcers of right and wrong, always assumed whoever died without the courtesy of a burial ritual and fare for their journey must have done something to deserve it. These were the souls Persephone had come to collect at the end of her yearly transhumance from death to life. She bound the aimless departed to her presence, so they wouldn't wander off and dissipate into the mists, and they were to go with her everywhere from that moment on, until it was finally time for her descent into Hades. The wonderful smell of the coliva must have drawn them near, as intended, because there they were, rejoining the living, even though they were no longer in need of food or drink. The women of the Thesmophoria looked so tragic in their mournful stances, not even the dead questioned their grief. Pangs of hunger added to their penance, hunger which was never satisfied by the few seeds of pomegranate they were allowed to eat. Persephone had one of the fruits in her lap, already open, and its blood-red seeds burned bright against her alabaster skin, in the milky white mist. Only those who travel between worlds know there is a liminal space, a no-man's land, between life and death, which belongs to neither, a place where you are not anywhere, you no longer count as a mortal, or a god, you just exist, like the mist, or like time itself. The latter ceases to matter in this space, where the Moiri come to find peace from endlessly spinning the fates of the gods and the humans, in this place where fate had no dominion, and history was laid out flat at their feet, where they could see, understand, and remember its repetitive nature. Persephone watched the juice of the pomegranate, which looked very much like blood, drip through her fingers and spill on the frozen ground that drank it eagerly through porous ice, the same way it had done with all the blood spilled throughout history. Centuries and centuries of conflicts, and bloodshed, and empires, and ambitions, rose and fell and were forgotten, while the thirsty earth, whose favor the silly humans were trying in vain to propitiate with blood sacrifices, brought forth more bounty, not because it bent to the whims and demands of the latter, who were never satisfied, but in order to express its own purpose for being. How patient was Mother Gaia, her blessed great-grandmother, who was an aspect of herself as well. They shared identities, the gods, appearing in whatever form inspired them and best served to convey their messages. The young goddess of the dead stretched out her hands and blessed the ground with the juice of the pomegranate, to strengthen the spirits of the lost before their long tonic journey. The quiet morning of the community slowly morphed into a more agitated state, with women getting up, one by one, to tend to the things that needed doing, from brewing the ceremonial wine to setting the table for the feast, while still refraining from talking, food and drink, awaiting the breaking of the fast which happened at sundown. Not too far from her, two mourners with their long unbraided hair wrapped around their arms, so it wouldn't catch fire, were mixing aromatic mind-altering herbs into the drink of the dead. Persephone recognized Nightshade, Ivy, and Morning Glory, and the ghostly pallor of Wormwood. The women whispered over the boiling libation, while its steam rose and got absorbed through their nostrils and skin, making their eyes shine and all the blood rush to their cheeks. A single cry announced the breaking of the fast and the women got up, relieved to end their motionless silence, filling the mist with laughter, pouring libations, and bringing out baked goods and poppets whose suggestive shapes were meant to provoke laughter and lighten the spirits. Somewhere in the back, somebody was keeping a lively rhythm on a bandeer, while the lyre followed it with intricate flourish, accompanied by cheerful voices. The air was filled with women's loudness and freedom from all their societal bonds, here, among their sisters, away from men and protected by the secrecy of the ritual, they were allowed to speak their minds, to be loud and shrill and foul-mouthed, here where nobody would judge and preach and rule their lives for them. Protected by Demeter, they engaged in jokes and dances that their male companions would have found inconceivable, transforming from dutiful, long-suffering and subservient matrons into the wild and free forces of nature they were meant to be, the bringers of life, of nurturing, of pleasure, and of beauty. The world was ugly without women, without their never-ending patience, love and sacrifices. A brutal and gory succession of bloody deaths and battles, a place which would have made Tartarus look pleasant. All that ever happened in this world was a never-ending fight for power and wealth, at any cost, accepting unspeakable sacrifices for its vain glory, somebody else's sacrifices most of all, and nobody asked the women whether they agreed to any of them, because they were supposed to be quiet, obedient, and not have opinions, hidden as they were behind their protective walls. Everywhere else the world did not consult them in its pointless, repetitive drama of ambitions, greed, and bloodthirsty ire, everywhere but here. Let your daughters drink and dance then, Mother Gaia, and let them speak words that would make sailors blush. Let them be free to worship their fertility rites away from rigid minds and arbitrarily imposed laws. And yes, let them express their womanhood however they saw fit, unbound by the mores of society and the sententious tongue lashing of the hierophants, for even in their old age or homely countenance, even with disheveled hair and stained clothing, eyes glossy from the wine and the potent herbs they indulged in, performing obscene dances and jokingly sacrificing totems and baked goods shaped like pigs, snakes and body parts that should not be mentioned to the fire, they were all beautiful. Join them, daughter, don't be a stick in the mud, Demeter prodded, smiling broadly, compliments of the generous feast and the hot libation. Persephone had already finished a cup of wine mixed with herbs, and they were potent herbs, much more so than the sacred plants of Dionysus. A sip from the cup would make one very happy, a quarter of it would bring visions, and drinking it all would make any mortal a permanent citizen of her world. The goddess was in an excellent mood, so she joined the wild dances around the fire, still graceful, even in her wobbly state, and stirring laughter and unseemly comments from her dancing companions. The world had treasures to offer, hidden from sight by the social imperatives, which relegated women to mindless obedience and retiring expectations, and if the latter had to loosen the bonds of tradition and paint outside the lines to find those treasures, so much the better. Let them rule the meadows and the forests then. Let them command the streams and the wind, and claim their legacy as rightful heirs of Mother Gaia. Let them assert her power, benevolence, and gifts, which flowed through their veins and were passed down through countless generations to their daughters. Dance, fair sisters. Dance, drink and shout, because for all your labors you have earned that right.